Welcome to the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. This is episode 9, almost out of single digits. Joining me this week, we have Jeff Smith in Washington, and someone else is back from a business trip in Hawaii, Everett Okemi.
Hey guys. My tan is still intact.
Well, you don't have to worry about a tan living down in the tropical paradise.
Well, that's what I'm saying, it's still intact. I mean, I left Arizona with one, and I came back with not lighter, not darker, just the same, so that's good.
Do you get a little windburn over there?
A little bit. I'm not used to that.
So what did you do? You went to some of the Mercedes?
I went to 3 days of the Mercedes. I was there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I would have gone sooner if I could have talked my wife out of our vacation ending sooner, but that didn't happen.
Oh, a business trip, huh?
Well, I went for vacation first, and then, yeah, I went for quote-unquote work.
Uh-huh.
A lot of work to do in Maui.
He was giving his wife the business, I see.
Yeah. But it was a great time down there, and it was my first PGA event to actually watch, and it was just actually cool to see the players, and especially at that event with the crowd so little. I mean, living in Phoenix, I'll never go to the FBR unless I'm sitting in a VIP box just to deal with those crowds. But going to the Mercedes was, I mean, you're walking right next to these guys side by side, and it was great.
Well, tell us who you saw.
I pretty much got everyone's autograph. Talked to a lot of players like Ted Purdy. He's just a down-to-earth guy. And talked to Jason Gore a couple times. Actually, checking into the hotel, Jason and his wife were staying at the same hotel that I was. So as I'm checking in, they're kind of walking around, getting their bags ready to go off to the tournament on Friday. And then just throughout the time, you know, at breakfast or sometimes at dinner, I bump into him and his wife again. Didn't see any other players or caddies at my hotel. The rest of them were at a different one. But it was still kind of cool to run into people.
To hit the ball more solid off the tee, you need to swing at a pace you can't control and catch the ball right in the middle of the club face.
You want to hit it a little bit longer, try moving it up in your stance just a little.
You got to complete your backswing.
Try a little pause at the top.
Try a bigger shoulder turn.
Grip it more in the fingers and less in the palm.
If you want to hit it big, you got to swing big.
And the most important tip of all,
trust your tightest.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
That was a good shot, too.
Well, we've got some stuff to talk about this week. To start out, Michelle Wee, of course, we've been watching her major meltdown. We saw that the first day of the Sony Open.
She was plus nine in the first round. Not sure how she's doing in the second round. I was going to load that up right here. I'm not even sure she's off yet, but
having a really tough time, and everybody's kind of giving her an out because there's a lot of build up to it and a lot of expectations and so on. But man,
it's the third year. Is there build up? It's the third year. I'm kind of getting sick of it by now. First year, first time, okay. Second year, ooh, maybe she'll do it this time. She only missed it by one or two last time. Third year is like, okay, there she's missing the cut again.
And that is considered one of her home courses there. So, I mean, she knows it. She's got the local knowledge with the winds. I mean, either she can do it or she can't. So,
yeah. Has it run its course? I mean, I kind of imagine she'll do it for the next 3 or 4 years. I mean, at least while she's still in high school. I'm not really sure about it.
She's going to keep playing with the man.
Sponsored by Sony and being her home course, hometown, I think she'll keep at least trying that event for as long as she can.
Do you think she'll win on the LPGA Tour this year? We've asked that before, but...
What did I say before? I don't remember. I don't know if she's going to. I mean, maybe it's the giant distance between women's play and men's play, but she certainly isn't showing signs of being real solid right now. So
I don't think she will.
I'm not even going to answer it. PGA Tour announced unveiled its 2007 schedule without ABC, as Jeff and I talked about last week, without ESPN. The Golf Channel picks up quite a bit. They're covering the Hawaiian events, basically. One other one, I think. The first two rounds, the Thursday, Friday rounds of pretty much a lot of tournaments, as well as also the fall finish stuff. All the stuff after the Tour Championship. So, no ABC, no ESPN, and suddenly the Golf Channel, unfortunately, because I don't think their coverage is terribly great. Perhaps it'll pick up because they have this now. Big change, big shakeup.
Yeah, major shakeup, and I think the tour is kind of entering a real transition time. You know, they obviously anticipated. Kind of a lift, you know, releasing this new schedule, the FedEx Cup and so on. They expected to have kind of a lift, but things have been a real letdown right at the beginning of the season, and now it's kind of on the Golf Channel's shoulders and NBC, CBS to really pick things up and make a show of it. It's my hope that the Golf Channel, you know, takes it seriously enough to maybe hire some names and do it right.
I think they will, and I think having a 15-year contract is going to help with that. And I think maybe that was kind of the pull. Was
it's kind of unprecedented. 15 years. I mean, the Golf Channel's only been around for 10.
Yeah, and that's huge for them. And so I think that's going to be a big boost for them, is knowing that, all right, now we have the income. Now we can go after some names, and which is good, because maybe they'll get some of those guys that were from ABC or ESPN, and you know, at least as a transition period, get some of those guys who already have the talent in there.
I don't know. I mean, they're only really covering Thursday and Friday, so it's tough to see or tough to say. And, you know, other news: the BC Open, which has been pretty much the lowest attended, you know, changed to an opposite field event in the past 10 years or something, is going to end up being a Champions Tour or a Nationwide Tour event. It's no longer apparently on the PGA Tour as of 2007. Wow. And of course, the Players' Championship moved to May.
Ford, which I think is a good move.
I think so too. Weather and, you know, just scheduling and pace between the Masters and the other majors. So, you know, I'm all for that. What was the last bit I was going to mention was, it's escaping me at this moment, but, you know, a couple other things shifted. You know, the Bell Canadian Open went to September up to July, so a big change there.
Yeah, and you had Ford pulled out of Doral.
That's what I was going to talk about, yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty major.
It's now a Computer Associates and a WGC event, so. I mean, that's good on one hand. Perhaps it being a WGC event, we'll have some bigger names there. Certainly the course lends itself, as we saw last year, to some nice drama between Phil and Tiger. So hopefully, as a WGC event, they'll get some bigger names there. But, yeah, Ford pulled out. Anytime the car manufacturers pull out of stuff, that's not a good sign. We shall see.
I think a lot of sponsors, at least the impression that I can kind of see, is maybe a lot of those major sponsors want to see if this new season or this new format is actually going to work.
Well, then they wouldn't pull out, especially for, you know, I mean, they'd probably give it a try, right, for the first year? I mean, pulling out now is pretty much saying we are confident it's not going to work.
Yeah, well, they are, and particularly when you're signing a 15-year deal with the Golf Channel. I mean, man, that's a long time, and they've really made their choice there, particularly ABC.
Perhaps the Golf Channel saw that the tour was in a pickle. ABC and ESPN pulling out kind of put the tour in a pickle. Maybe they were able to say, hey, we'll give you 15 years for the price of, you know, what you want us to pay for 5 years, and it'll look better for you guys to say, we signed a 15-year deal. You know, I mean, there could be something there, too. I mean, the Golf Channel might have seen an opportunity to get something cheap and at the same time sell it to the tour by saying, hey, we'll let you save some face here.
That's true.
Yeah.
But otherwise, a big blow, and, you know, you got Tim Fincham's kind of kicking himself as far as, you know, they really didn't pan out this year.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, it really is a year of transition, and I mean, well, we'll see how it goes, and then we've still got a couple of years to wait to find out what the FedEx Cup really looks like, so...
Right.
See how it all turns out.
Davis helped us understand something again this week in his numbers game article. The 40-30-20 rule, Dave takes the stats of the LPGA Tour just to see, the 2005 stats of the LPGA Tour, to see if they correspond as the men's stats do. And what he found was putting average, and again, greens and regulation, has a very tight correspondence once again. Driving average, or driving accuracy and driving distance, about the same as with the men, perhaps a little bit more dispersed, actually, or something, I think. He applied his 40-30-20 rule, which says that if you take a player's rank in greens and regulation, putting, driving distance, and driving accuracy, and weigh it 40% GIR, 30% putting, 20% driving distance, and 10% driving accuracy, figure out what that rating would be. He put a best fit line here in the graph, and it's going right through the heart of them. They're very closely clumped there, and for the top 80 players, I mean, they're all right there, right next to the line, practically. So, a very accurate predictor performance. Perhaps not week to week, but over the course of a season, you know, it's pretty spot on.
It's nice. I mean, it just reinforces what some of the top instructors keep telling us, and we're just not listening. Or at least I haven't.
And the the thing someone pointed out in the forum that the topic doesn't, or the rule doesn't take into consideration how Corey Pavin plays versus how Tiger Woods plays. That obviously, that doesn't matter so much. If a good, I responded and said, if a player's a good putter, but they're not the greatest at hitting greens, well, for whatever reason, either they're leaving themselves, you know, long putts or vice versa or whatever. You know, there are things that factor into that. Tiger Woods bombs it out there, so he's going to hit a lot of greens. But if he didn't get close to the pin or putt well, hitting greens wouldn't matter a whole lot. You know?
I remember reading an article a while back that kind of reinforced that players like Lauren Roberts and others who were great putters couldn't survive in the game if it wasn't for their putting.
Drive for show, putt for dough. So even in Dave's analysis, 30% is putting. 30% is driving. 70% is putting and hitting greens. So.
Yeah, well, and that just says that, you know, in your practice, take your wedges with you and bring a putter, and you're really gonna do a lot better.
Moving on, 547,796,176.
And change.
No, we're not talking about my school loans. We are talking about what, Jeff?
We're talking about how much money that Tiger Woods has made in his short 10-year career. So, thus far.
Oh, I read it wrong. I thought it was how much money Michael Jordan owed Tiger Woods from bad bets.
I'd like to hear, actually, how much Jordan has made, or how much he made in 10 years in his sport. But this is just remarkable. I mean, $500 million the guy's pulled in 10 years.
Tiger Woods almost beat the PGA Tour in his drive to $1 billion.
He did.
He gained ground quickly. Despite, you know, starting 30 years later. Well, there you go.
Amazing.
$547,796,176. You could chop off the left 3 digits, chop off the left 4 digits, and I'd be happy.
Yeah.
Maybe not over 10 years, but...
It's staggering. I mean, yeah. over half a billion dollars the guy's made in endorsements and earnings.
What's interesting is, you know, when they start showing those numbers, like, what is a billion exactly? A billion seconds equals, what was it, 32 years? Is that what it came out to?
Something like that, I don't know.
So it just, I mean, everyone knows it's a huge number and a massive amount of money, but when you start looking at other little perspectives like that, it just blows my mind.
Yeah.
No wonder the guy buys a $40 million, what did you guys call it last week?
Fixer-upper.
Yep. It's a fixer-upper.
Right. He's got some work to do.
Yeah, you know, his wife's not going to like that building or this building, and so, you know, you're going to need a new one.
Tom Hanks and Shelley Long, I think, were the former owners, right?
Oh, is that right? I didn't hear that.
No, I'm making a Money Pit joke.
Oh.
Weren't they in Money Pit?
And I didn't get it.
I think they were in Money Pit.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks, Shelley Long. There we go. It's only from 1986. Before Tiger Woods started making $547,796,176. Hey, you know what? We forgot to introduce the Golf God segment. I don't know what they're talking about this week because they haven't gotten it to us yet, but they will soon. So here you go.
From the studios of GolfGods.com in Minneapolis, this is Chip Shots, a weekly look at golf equipment news brought to you by the staff of GolfGods.com, the official online pro shop of thesandtrap.com. This week on Chip Shots, it's Dancing with the King.
Well, since my baby left me, well, I found a new place to dwell. Well, it's down at the end of Lone Street, that heartbreak hotel where I'll be just lonely.
Like the familiar sneer, the sideburns, or in the latter years, the unmistakable jumpsuit, TaylorMade seems to be doing its best to become the Elvis of the golf world. By that, I don't mean the bloated Elvis from the Vegas years, but rather the lean young Elvis, who draws in his audience with the look, sound, and nuances that made Elvis the king of rock and roll. Clearly, the folks in Carlsbad weren't all shook up when the new R7 425 became an immediate hit. In its PGA Tour debut last week at the Winners Only Mercedes Championships, the club led the driver count with 9 out of 28. That gave TaylorMade a sweep of the drivers, fairway woods, irons, hybrids, and putters, the first time in the Carlsbad Company's 27-year history it has done so. Of course, there are some differences between TaylorMade and Elvis. Consider this. Unlike Elvis, whose longest run at the top of Billboard charts was 16 weeks, TaylorMade drivers have been number one in the count for an astounding 205 straight weeks. I spoke this week to Mike Burling, a TaylorMade regional sales rep, who first handled the R7 425 back in October of 2005. He told Golf Gods the biggest difference between the new R7 and the old R7 is how the new R7 expanded the range of players who could benefit from all the technology. In his opinion, the R7 425 is simply the most consistent, forgiving driver he's ever played. To dig further, we had to ask why. Since the introduction of the original R7 in 2004, one of the immediate cries was for a larger clubhead. The larger clubhead gives the player 25 cc's of more clubhead size, and it has allowed tailor-made designers to adjust the placement of four movable weights wider than on its predecessor in an effort to enhance slicer draw correction. Another major change is the shaft. The R7 425 TP is equipped with the new tailor-made Reax TP graphite shaft featuring Fujikura's proprietary RoboMax technology. The 65-gram Reax shaft uses a woven sheet of graphite fibers near the tip to reduce the tendency of the shaft's circular structure to flatten out in the bottom part of the downswing. Cutting through the marketing, what the shaft is supposed to deliver is unbelievable consistency. The new R7s are available online now. You'll pay $400 for the R7 Quad 425 and $800 for the R7 Quad 425 TP. Finally, you can't call TaylorMade the king without talking about a comeback special. According to Burling, TaylorMade will launch a 460cc R7 in March with two movable weights. Well, that's it for Chip Shots this week, brought to you by the staff of GolfGods.com. We'll be back next week with a preview of the 2006 PGA Show.
For a crisper long iron, grip up on it about an inch.
Be real aggressive through impact.
Keep it short and aggressive.
Maintain your balance.
Take one more club and swing it smooth.
Think happy thoughts.
For a soft draw, close your stance and make sure you release the club.
I'm going to line my feet to the right a little bit.
Hook the club face, then grip the club.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
And one more tip.
Trust your tightest.
Oh, that's got to be it, guys. Come on, that's a perfect shot.
Okay, well, thanks to Titleist, and we heard some news this week that some golf club thieves stole some clubs, and apparently Wade Ormsby thought he'd never see his clubs again until the thieves offered them for sale at his father's golf shop, which really worked out well. They tried to exchange these unique clubs, which apparently were worth $7,400 for cash at Pete's Golf. So they got nabbed. I mean, which brought up the idea for me that, you know, we got to be careful with our golf clubs because it's really common for guys to be stalking us for our clubs. So I'm starting to leave my clubs in the car, pay for my round, come back and get them.
Yeah, I belong to a country club, so I don't face that problem too much. Not necessarily because I'm afraid of, you know, other rich people stealing my clubs, but the fact that they're all 70, so I'm pretty sure I could catch them.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Maybe it was us. We were talking about some kids who ran out onto the green, snagged some old guy's clubs, and ran into the woods. Was that us?
No.
Okay.
That was your other golf podcast friends.
It must have been.
Or are you thinking of the giant chipmunk that runs out of the fairway and grabs your ball and
raves? Oh, he's got a buddy.
Yeah, exactly.
A dumb commercial.
That's right.
These thieves are somewhat stupid. So.
That's right. They got caught, and good for him for catching them.
Here you go. Wait, one last word here.
Ormsby
said the clubs, all Titleists except a rare tailor-made driver, were of little use to anyone else. I'll take them.
Yeah. <I'll> be, yeah. Why?
What's he talking about?
Why were they of little use?
I don't know. That is okay. Great. I'll give you $200 for them. Sold.
Right. If
there were $7,400, they're obviously of use to someone. I mean, because if they were no use to anyone, it'd be worth $0. But whatever.
Yeah.
That's just what he filed on his homeowner's insurance, I guess.
That's
it. Little use to anyone, right?
So, Jeff, before I fire you, what's up with Donald Trump here?
Yeah, oh, right, exactly. Well, Donald Trump apparently is looking for 100 golfers to participate in the Trump Million Dollar Invitational. And this is going to be a high-stakes tournament that's going to take place in May. All of these golfers are going to be competing against each other for some major bucks. So it looks like
you have to wear a toupee.
You got to have extremely bad hair.
Okay. You have to have a bad one.
Yeah.
Very bad, which I qualify for the toupee wearing. I'll never wear one, but, you know, I mean, if I was going to compete, sure, I guess I would. But.
Okay.
And you have to glorify everything. You have to glorify your game, your clubs, your equipment. It just, everything has to be
That's
done.
That's the best slice in the world. Look at that thing go. You cannot find a better slice anywhere.
Wow. Nicely played.
That's right. TrumpMillionDollar.com. So there you go.
And apparently, we hear that the Chinese invented golf 1,000 years ago. That this Professor Lin Hongling of Lanzhou University in China apparently is saying now that the Chinese were playing golf 1,000 years ago. Man, you're going to need a little more than a book to convince me that it's not the Scots.
Indeed.
Don't they own enough already? I mean, just leave golf alone.
I thought Al Gore invented golf.
Yeah, I think he did. Now that you mentioned that, I think
right before
he did.
The internet.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
Well, I mean, they created gunpowder, so, you know, they'll probably be taking the internet as their invention, too.
Yeah, I'm fine. I believe Rob Williams. I believe that the Scots invented golf.
Yes, it does fit the Scots.
Hey, but if the Chinese invented it, some of the club names are kind of cool. Kun Bang for your driver.
Here's my idea for a fucking sport. A knuckleball in a gopher.
Good enough for me.
Yep.
Sounds accurate.
How about instead of telling your caddy that you want your three wood, yet you want your Xiao Bang?
Xiao yeah, Bang something.
Xiao Bang, I like that. Hang out the Xiao Bang.
You don't go for the big dog, you go for the Kaun Bang.
The Kaun Bang.
Kaun Bang or Kwan
I'll
Bang?
I'll switch my allegiance if every golf club in Chinese ends with Bang.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Is it true?
It looks like it.
It's a Bang.
Okay, he says that he has found a reference to a game called, and I don't speak Chinese, so who knows, Chui Wan.
Chui Wan.
Chui meaning to hit, and Wan meaning ball. Sounds like a form of punishment to me. That says a game.
Well, if the golf part of it doesn't work, then they'll say that they invented baseball.
Right. I mean, but it could be a game, you know, prison guards played with prisoners, so.
It could.
Indeed.
Oh, well, I have no idea.
Okay, so Professor Ling says the book refers to a Chinese magistrate instructing his daughter to, quote, dig goals in the ground so that he might drive a ball into them with a purposely crafted stick.
That doesn't sound Chinese to me.
It doesn't sound at all Chinese.
That sounds like English. So
yeah. Whatever. Yeah, well, there you go.
I'm sticking with Al Gore. No, I'm not.
Please don't.
Right.
Please.
Fair enough.
Xiao Bang. Where's William Hong when you need him?
That's right. What's this? The first time you said this, I thought the guy's name was Well Hung, but I suppose that would be I don't know. If your last name was Hung, you should name your kid Will, just because I think that'd be funny.
Will Hung?
Will Hung.
I actually went to school with a guy named Bud Weiser.
Nice.
His last name was Weiser, and they called him Bud.
I would too.
But that kind of pigeonholes you. I mean, you're only drinking one brand the rest of your life.
I suppose, but at the same time, what if one of the other brands paid him to advertise for them?
Yeah,
here is Budweiser representing...
Coors.
Yeah, Coors, yeah, sure.
Miller Lite. Oh, good, yeah, that was nice.
No.
Hello?
Yeah, come in.
It's Al Gore on the phone. He says he invented golf. He's calling to clarify. He actually invented it but after the internet.
And it's spelled G-O-L-F-E.
He invented it after the internet, which explains why it took so long for the sand trap to come around. The internet was out before. But I'll probably cut that all out, so whatever. That was episode 9, and that's the end, because we're done.
Well, thanks for listening to another rambling week at thesandtrap.com podcast. Hope you enjoyed yourself, and on behalf of the other guys, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.